Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joan Badoski.
And this is Start Writing.
And we are continuing to talk about dialogue. So today we're going to cover a topic called switch tracking. And that's actually a title from psychology. So in writing, we usually talk about characters should have their own motivations and their own goals. And psychology, in its very detailed study of communication, has identified specifically when a conversation switches from being one person talking about something with another person to that person now switching that and trying to get the conversation to pursue a different goal for themselves. It's a little bit complex, so we're going to get into the examples really quickly to kind of break it down, but I do want to kind of give you that basic thing. What we're looking at is the moment when the conversation switches tracks and now two people are having one conversation about two different things, sometimes three different things, and we'll break into that and how that can add conflict and tension to your dialogue. Now, this is definitely a little bit of a nuanced thing. This is not something you're going to want to put into all your dialogue, but we'll go into that as well.
Hmm. Hey, real fast, let me ask you. So I haven't heard of this this term. Do you remember when you first heard it or where you accessed it?
It was actually, have you heard of Hidden Brain?
No.
Hidden Brain is an NPR podcast about psychology, and they did an episode on this.
Cool. That's awesome. Okay, cool. Go on. I don't mean to.
Okay. So the example comes from a television show called Lucky Louie, and we're going to listen to it here. And so what it is Louie and his wife are getting ready to go on a romantic getaway from, you know, work and kids and everything. And he gets her some flowers. And this kind of starts the whole conversation here. So let me make sure that you can get my sound. Okay.
Listen, try not to take this the wrong way, okay? But if we're going to be married for the next 30 years, I need you to know that red roses are not my thing.
Okay, well, can I critique how you just told me that?
I've told you before that I don't like red roses, remember?
I just think that you should have thanked me for the flowers first and then said the thing about the roses. Still, it's a gift. So I guess I don't think it matters what it is. You should still thank me, right?
Yeah, but you see, I don't necessarily think I should thank you for giving me something that I've specifically told you that I don't like. That's all.
Hang on. All I'm asking for here is a tiny bit of gratitude.
I said thank you.
No, you didn't. I was standing there with the flowers.
I said thank you the first time you gave me red roses. Remember? It was my birthday. I said thank you. And then I said very politely that I would prefer it in the future if you never again gave me red roses. So either you didn't listen or you don't care. Which is it? When I tell you things and you don't listen, it's a huge insult to me. It makes me feel like I don't matter.
Believe me, I totally get this. You want me to listen to you and then later remember the things that you say.
So that's the conversation. And so, okay, so that's the clip. As Jay pointed out, there are a few gaps where I kind of like sped things along to the switch track points that we wanted to look at, right? So it's very easy to see that they're kind of talking about different things. And it's easy to see what each character wants in the conversation. They're very clear about it, right? She wants him to listen to what she's saying. And he wants her to be grateful, right? Their two motives are very clear. And you can see each character pushing that agenda, right? One character says what they want. I want you to listen and remember. And the other character is, but I want this, right? And so the switch track, like the one thing I like about this example is that it is really easy to see where the switch takes place, right? As soon as he starts talking, it switches, right? I want, you know, can I critique how you told me that? Like immediately, like he is no longer invested in her conversation. He's got his own agenda now. And that's really clear in that moment. But there's another thing going on here that I want to talk about that is that third layer of conflict. So we have the two points of conflict. She wants him to listen. He wants her to be grateful. And neither of them are really budging towards each other. And that's the point of conflict within the conversation. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. But the other thing that happens is the minute the switch track has taken place, the third conflict is there is now conflict and an argument about what this conversation is about that neither of them even fully recognizes. Be like, mm-hmm. we no longer even agree what we're having a conversation about. And so it's a good way to introduce a lot of conflict into a conversation and to make sure that each character is kind of pursuing their own goals within that conversation. Hmm. So another one I want to look at is Hills Like White Elephants. And this is one by Ernest Hemingway. It's a very famous short story of his. And he does a lot of switch tracking in this story. And it's a very short story. I'm going to list a podcast later that like they read the whole podcast. They read the whole short story in the podcast. And it's just over 10 minutes. So it's really short. In the story, a man and a woman are traveling to Madrid to get an abortion. And the whole story then takes place at a train station where they're stopping to take a break. And they sort of discuss it, but it's buried in subtext and switch tracking that unless you really study the work, you probably would even never know the scene was about abortion, right?
Are you familiar with us enough that you could give us an example of a hint that that's what the conversation is about?
So there's a couple of things that kind of hint that this is what the conversation is about. They do often refer to it as the operation, okay. You know, that she's going to get. But they never talk about her health as an issue, that she's sick, she needs surgery. There's never that any kind of thing. There's an operation to relieve some responsibility is really all we kind of get out of it. And then the white elephant itself is a metaphor that comes from Siam. So in Siam, when the king was very displeased with someone, he would give them a rare and expensive gift, which is a living white elephant. And on the surface, this is a very nice gift because it's very expensive and it's a great honor. But the intent behind giving the gift is that the upkeep on this creature is so expensive that it would ruin anyone. And so it is a burden as well. And so the symbol of the white elephant is often thought of how a lot of people see children, right? That they can be this lifetime burden on you. That's, you know, they can ruin you. You know, they're very financially demanding. They demand a lot of time and you know, a lot of people also celebrate the fact that you're having a child, you know, without considering the long-term, you know, impact on your life about it. So
is the term white elephant in there because the characters say it, or is it the narrator and the title that are the only way it gets brought up?
No. The characters say it.
Okay. Okay.
So, and we will actually hear the very clip where they bring it up as cool. Well. Okay. So like I said, I have contacted the creator of this podcast to see if we can get the whole short story to just be read at the end of this episode. I haven't heard back from her. So if the whole short story isn't at the end of this and you do want to listen to it, I will put the link in the show notes as well so you can go listen to it. But we're going to listen to a very short example here of how Hemingway is using switch tracking. But he's doing it more than we saw in that previous conversation. Here it's going to be buried in metaphor and subtext as well. Like there is multiple layers going on here.
Looked at the man and the girl. The girl was looking off at the line of hills. They were white in the sun, and the country was brown and dry. They look like white elephants, she said. I've never seen one, the man drank his beer. No, you wouldn't have, I might have, the man said. Just because you say I wouldn't have doesn't prove anything.
So here, she first talks about the hills, how they look like white elephants. And then he comments that he's never seen one, right? And at this point, you know, most people assume they're still talking about actual white elephants. But then she switches, right? And says, you never would have seen one, would you? Right? And the idea is that she's now talking about children, that he would have never had his own children because he's not that kind of person. And in response, he either recognizes that and intentionally doesn't respond to it, or stays on the track that they're actually talking about white elephants, and mentions, be like, just because you say I wouldn't have seen one doesn't mean that I haven't, right? And so we see the track switch, you know, three times right there. But again, it's still buried in the metaphor itself. Like, it, understanding switch tracking and then reading this story, it's like, wow, Hemingway was a master of writing.
I kind of want to know about this from a psychology perspective. Like, what does a psychiatrist do when they notice switch tracking in a session? Like, is that where this would apply, and what would that look like?
Yeah. So what they'd be looking for is communication style. One is when switch tracking has taken place, it's like if you're having an argument or conflict, then the ability to recognize switch tracking is, one, identify that that third argument is taking place, right? So, you know, you're no longer just arguing at each of your own points, but you also have the third argument. What is this conversation about? And the first thing you've got to do is be like, you've got to stop the tracks. Be like, one, you've got to stop arguing about what the conversation is about. Two, you have to pick one of these topics to discuss so you're not just butting each other's heads the whole time. Be like, yeah, my, yours, and they're not necessarily, you know, against each other. They're each an argument. You know, Louis's arguing for gratitude. She's arguing for him to listen. Okay. Well, those two don't have to be argued against each other, but because they've switched tracks, they are, right? He argues for her to be grateful. She argues for him to listen, instead of them having one conversation about him listening, another conversation about her gratitude. And then you don't have to have the third, you know, argument going on at all, because the other two have been broken up into separate discussions.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, like, the third level is they're not agreeing on what the conversation is about. And that, as long as the characters don't recognize the third level, then there's a conflict, like, woven through everything going on in the conversation, because they're not on the same page. They're not talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
Or
so you have conflict one. Okay. So let's go back to the Louis conversation. Conflict one. She wants him to listen, right? So this, she introduces the point of conflict. She wants him to listen and doesn't feel like he is. So that's our first point of conflict. Now, instead of discussing this point of conflict with her, he brings up his point of conflict. You're not grateful. So now we have two points of conflict occurring. And this introduces the third point of conflict, that is, what is this conversation about? And they are also arguing about that. It's about you not being grateful. It's about you not listening, right? So you now have these three levels of conflict. So when you want to add conflict to dialogue, switch tracking is a great way to do that, because immediately you could take what might be one point of conflict and expand it to three.
Yeah. Okay. Now, another question. I watch a lot of Seinfeld, and it's very common for one character to say something to the other one, like, you know, I'm sick and tired of Kenny Banya, whatever. And then instead of responding to that comment, the other person says, I can't believe she said that. And it's like they're both having their own conversation kind of with themselves. I think this is similar to what you're describing, but not quite the same. Anyway,
that is called staying on your own track, right? And I was researching this, and it just felt like it was just connected to switch tracking. Okay. But yeah, essentially, they are having their own conversation, right? Regardless of what this other person decides to talk about, I'm talking about my thing, right? Yeah. I stay on my own track.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, definitely. an element of dialogue that's used as well is when you don't respond to what they're saying and just have the conversation you want to have regardless of how they respond.
Yeah. Okay. So another question is, I imagine you want to leave layer three intact most of the time because it adds so much conflict. And maybe this is just obvious and I don't even need to ask it, but if you have a character with the insight to see that third level and to course correct and like be willing to go onto the other person's track, then that basically resolves the conflict, right?
Yeah.
So is that ever something? Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, surely it's sometime we want to do it if there's like a Dumbledore figure. But otherwise, you don't want them to realize there's that third level and you want to leave the conflict.
Unless you're writing a book about communication, it's probably something you're not ever going to dive into, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's an extra layer of conflict we're adding for the point of tension. But unless your book is about communication at its core plot, it's not adding to your narrative to address that third layer.
Yeah, okay.
So like, we use body language for subtext, but at no point are you going to actually talk about the body language unless that's an important part of the novel itself,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
It's just used to add tension to a scene through that subtext.
Cool.
So there are a few things I want to talk about in the danger of switch tracking or even staying on your own track. And that is that it can kind of derail a conversation really quickly and really drag it out if you're not watching it carefully, right? You know, you've got this character working for this goal, you've got that character, and suddenly, you know, they're just both fighting off in their own directions, and it can run away from you really quickly, right? Which can really slow down your pacing as the tug of war takes place between these two characters. So I definitely don't think switch tracking is something you're going to want to use a lot in all your dialogue. It's a very surgical tool, right? I think it could be good when you're doing early character introductions because you very much get to see a character's values, goals, and motivations as they switch that track to fight for the thing they want. So I think it could be a good tool to use there. Let's say you've got a scene that's moving through a lot of plot points, but it kind of feels emotionally flat, or maybe it's a little heavy on exposition. A character who does some switch tracking can add a lot of conflict and tension to that scene to kind of spike the emotion a little bit there. But yeah, definitely, personally, I don't think it's something you're going to add to every point of dialogue in a book. It's going to take up a little bit of room, and it is switching the track, so it's going to derail things just a little bit. And so it's definitely a tool to be used at the right moment to kind of add something to a conversation. So check out, Hills with Flight Elephants is a unique example because, Hemingway is talking about abortion without trying to reference it directly. And so the whole conversation is just a switch tracking back and forth constantly between the characters. And that's very much the driving tool of that conversation. So the whole short story is riddled with it. Whereas, if your book is about a revolution, it's not going to all be, driven that way. And so definitely a balancing point is when do I use this versus when do I not to manage the tension and conflict in my scenes.
Hey, I got one more question before we wrap up. With Hills with White Elephants, she's making a comment about the hills, and then she makes a comment about his life experience, and he kind of defends. I guess I'm saying, well, and then in the other example, they started with the roses, and then it was about like gratitude versus remembering or hearing. How many times can you switch tracks? I mean, we've got like, say, three tracks in these examples where it's like we start on one and then separate into two.
Yeah. So, initially, like you're the switch track is character one has their goals and motivations for the conversation, right? So the conversation's on that track. And then the switch track is when character two comes in, instead of agreeing that that's what the conversation is about, they say, no, I want to talk about the thing that's important to me.
Okay.
And that's kind of the fundamental switch track right there is the character has gone off on their own goals and motivations, not what the original conversation was about. So I
guess what I'm saying, like, what if the character A then like switched the track again, like, could you do this multiple times? Or
Maybe. So
I guess in my mind, it's like if the character's digging to a deeper issue with each track switch, then that probably would make sense in the conversation. But if it's just like switching randomly, then maybe there's like...
Well, I mean, every time you have a switch, it's driven by the character's motivations, right? So you'll definitely see this in Hills Like White Elephants, right? So we have that initial switch where we see, you know, she, you know, he, they're talking about the hills, and then suddenly she's talking about children, you know, and so she has switched the track there, and he does not want to have that conversation. So he doesn't, you know, follow with that. He pulls back. Then later on, he'll bring up the operation to her, and she'll switch the track because she doesn't want to talk about it. And so, like I said, you'll see it throughout the whole story, each of them switching tracks as they pursue their goals and their motivations within the story. He wants her to have it, and it really seems like she's unsure or doesn't want to. And that's kind of the push and pull back and forth between them the whole time. Their core goals and motivations don't change. She doesn't want to have it. He wants her to have it. And anytime there's a switch track, it's because one is pushing that on the other.
And I wish that I could ask Hemingway's ghost whether, whether he observed this conversation or if it happened to him. Or like, how did he come up with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's this. So I do not like Hemingway. I find him really dull and boring. But reading this story is the moment when I said, regardless of how I feel about his writing personally, he was a master of writing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this was the story where I really realized just how brilliant a writer he was. So, but yeah, I think that is interesting. Like, mate, did he overhear this conversation and just kind of, you know, convert it into a short narrative?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
No, this has been an interesting conversation. I should have derailed you a little more often.
So, all right. As always, that's the end of our episode. So it's time to start writing.